Welcome to Eurofile. My name is Kate Walker.
And I'm Catherine Rory.
Hi, Kat.
Hi.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
I'm sipping my Barry's Irish breakfast this very moment.
Oh
I will
God.
Be having a Guinness later. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My mom made some corned beef and cabbage.
Love that. Did you eat that? Because, you know, you're kind of vegetarian.
I
took a bite.
Tried a piece.
Yeah.
I tried a non-scary piece that I cut myself.
Perfect. Good. And then you can have plenty of cabbage.
It's St. Patrick's Day. And
what did we watch?
We watched Irish Wish with our girl, Lindsay Lohan.
She's back. She's beautiful.
She looks great.
And I just forget how good her voice is. What a cute voice. She's got everything. Honestly, she's so great.
Rooting for her. Glad she looks healthy. She looks happy. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, it's like essentially a Hallmark movie.
Right.
So it is, you know, don't expect Leonardo DiCaprio. Okay.
I was just going to say Titanic. I don't know why.
Yeah.
There's no Oscars being handed out for Irish Wish. But it was adorable. My sister texted me and she was like, it was terrible. And I was like, I was literally giggling the whole time.
Me too.
Watching it alone, laughing out loud to myself.
I know. It's cute.
It's so cute. Like, obviously,
you go into it knowing it's a Hallmark movie.
Yeah. Obviously, there are some things that were like very weird decisions that they made, like having her end up with a British man in an Irish movie.
Yeah.
Makes zero sense.
Irish Wish.
Yeah. Seriously.
Ends up with a British guy.
Yeah. Come on.
Is that a joke?
And then why is Jane Seymour her mom is just British with no explanation? I don't understand that.
I don't know either.
Like,
it's weird. You could have just left Ireland out of it completely, but yeah. Okay.
Yes, exactly. Like, But the thing about me is any dumb American girl goes abroad movie.
Oh,
I'm
there.
That's
my shit.
Speaking like, Leap Year is
Kryptonite.
Exactly the same. Leap Year.
Mm-hmm.
And
American woman going to anywhere under the Tuscan sun.
Letters to Juliet.
Lizzie McGuire movie.
Yeah. Like any of the Mary-Kate and Ashley movies.
It's what you grow up on.
Yes.
That's what made us little Europhiles.
Bread and butter. Europhile. Mm-hmm. Europhile bread and butter is American Girl Goes Abroad and finds love.
Yeah. And then you discover Godard. And then you're like, okay.
This is
actually great. And then you move on, Fellini, maybe. You know, it's like you just...
It's the gateway.
Exactly. This week, I finished Dairy Girls.
Oh, and those girls. I
was sobbing. Like, I told you, texted you, and you're like, I don't really remember, because I think you watched it much earlier than me.
It ended a long time ago, so I'm glad you realized
I didn't realize I watched this the last season, and they were voting in the referendum, and then, that was so emotional. Oh my God, it was like...
What a beautiful show. Perfect show.
I know. It really is the perfect show.
Mm-hmm.
It really
pleases,
is.
It's for the whole family, too.
Yeah.
Everyone can enjoy it.
So, Orla. Okay. No, you do it. You're the best.
Orla, why are you bringing my diary to school? I'm doing my book report on it.
Flower.
To school.
I love how they say, our flower. I love it.
So good.
Oh, I love that show so much.
Love those girls.
All right. So I'm so sorry, but we're not going to Ireland.
That's all right.
Inspiration
struck
very well
elsewhere. It's okay.
And it just worked with our schedule to record today. So sorry. I'm really, really sorry. But we're going to France.
Okay.
And we're going to talk about the history of Michelin.
Oh, Michelin. Fun. Okay, cool.
Allons-y. Let's go.
Mm-hmm.
So founded in 1888, it was started by the Michelin brothers, Andre and Edward. And they started to make tires for bikes. And they made tires for horse-drawn carriages. It was before the existence of an inflatable tire. So I don't really know what it was.
The materials, we don't need to know.
It sucked. Let's just know that. Not a rubber tire. What? Mm-hmm. Not inflated?
What is
that
it?
That can't be comfortable. No. I mean, we've all seen the jostling carriage rides of people mm-hmm. being flung around. You know, that's why they didn't want to travel more than like 2 hours, because it's like exhausting.
I would be sick.
I know. How would you not get like motion sick?
Yeah.
Is what I want to know. I'd have to like sit outside with the driver and like get air. But anyway, there was so much information about like the technology of tires. I am not going to get it.
That's not for this podcast. Mm-mm.
That's not for us.
That's for the tire podcast.
That's for someone else. So basically, they made tires for bikes. Okay. That's essentially the start of this company. And then one day, a cyclist needed a tire repair and turned up to the factory. And the way tires worked was they were glued to the rim. So not removable and not inflatable. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it took over 3 hours to remove the tire just to repair it. And then they like needed to like let it dry overnight. So basically it's just like, takes too long to repair these tires. Mm-hmm. The next day, Edward was like, you know, trying, testing, basically failed. Like this tire is like blown up and they're like, no, we mm-hmm. need a better way. Okay. So then in 1891, Michelin took out its first patent for the removable inflatable tire. Jeez. And it was basically just, you know, used in bike races. So this one cyclist used it in a race and everyone was like, what is this?
Mm.
This, and he didn't win or anything. Mm-hmm. I don't think he was a very, very good cyclist, but he was like, everyone was like, what is this new technology that we can harness?
Yeah.
In the 1930s, they introduced another tire. So if it punctured, it would run on a special foam lining, which is what we know now is like a run flat. So it's like, you're not like effed if you get a flat tire. So just like, it's just safer, you know, especially for bikes and eventually cars. So then Michelin bought Citroën in the 30s, car manufacturer.
Mm-hmm.
It was bankrupt at that time, so they bought it. And then they developed these two cars for front-wheel drive. One was like fancy, you know, it almost looked like a Bentley or, you know, like mm-hmm. The first prototype of like an Aston Martin. And then the Citroën, like a mini one, like a, you know, a regular person car.
Mm-hmm.
And because of its like superiority and like performance and like, I guess it saved a lot of money on fuel. The use of this tire was like caught on like wildfire in mm-hmm. Europe and Asia. And of course the US was like, we don't need to be using any new technology for this. We obviously had other, you know, competitors like Bridgestone that made tires here, and they didn't use this like superior technology.
Yeah.
And then they even supplied tires for F1. Mm. They don't anymore. There was like a lot of controversy, but I won't get into that. But basically Pirelli does the tires for F1 now. What I really wanted to get into and what really got me started on this, you know, diving into this topic was Bibendum. Do you know what that is?
No.
Okay. It's actually the Michelin man.
Oh, that's his name.
That's his name. That's his name.
Bibendum?
Bibendum. Bibendum. It's Latin.
Oh.
Okay. So what is more synonymous with Michelin than, you know, the Michelin man, Bibendum?
Of course.
And going back to the 19th century, you know, in the beginning of this company, the Michelin brothers were exhibiting their products, obviously, their bike tires, their skinny,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
At a fair in Lyon, where one person noticed them and said, if you added arms and legs, that would look like a man. So then years later, they contracted a caricaturist and Bibendum was born. So he was originally like adapted from this like German advertisement for like a brewer.
Oh,
so they switched him from drinking beer to having the capacity to swallowing the bumps on the road with this inflatable tire.
Wow. Point A to point B. So creative.
It like kind of how makes, they got it here. It makes total sense.
It does.
But you see the end result and you're like, what?
Yeah.
How did that get there?
Mm-hmm.
And then the early slogan went to make the ride smoother.
Mm-hmm.
So this was his like shtick. And then the idea where his name originated, bibendum, is from the Latin phrase nunc est bibendum, which translates to you're going to die. Now is the time to drink.
Bibendum.
Okay. God. And I'll tell you why that you're going to die. So maybe drinking and driving might not be the best combination. If you watch old movies or, you know, see old advertisements, tires were white. So this was like part of the character of Bibendum that he's white.
Yes. I never thought about that. Wow. And I always see like old vintage cars and I'm like, wow, those are so chic, white tires. Like, why don't we do that?
Yeah. So they were all white. Like the entire tire was white. And I feel like in old movies, you see like it's still coated with the rubber, but it has like that white like outside part. Yes.
Yeah, you're right.
So tires were actually all white. And then they introduced rubber, you know, just easier, more technology. There's way more to that I'm not going to get into about rubber. But
that's all right.
They added that technology and then eventually just coated the entire tire.
Okay.
In the rubber. So that's why tires are black today. And not a fun fact at all, in the 20s and 30s, Michelin operated rubber plantations in Vietnam.
Oh.
You know that? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Great.
And a lot of the plantations led to like famous labor movements in Vietnam and basically started. Nothing really happened with their particular plantations, but it kind of started the country moving towards, you know, workers' rights and things like that in Vietnam. I won't get into that, but it's very, it's rubber and it's Europeans. So you take what you will from that. Okay, so back to Bibendum. So originally, over the course of a century, he started... And he had a cigar and a monocle. Obviously, he was a big drinker, right? Lost any connotation with drinking. Obviously, that's not, like I said, not a good combination with driving. Got fitter.
Oh,
wasn't as
slim down,
chunky.
He's not drinking as much.
Even though they switched his tires to almost like a more modern tire, like a fatter, like car tire.
Yeah.
He looked younger and switched his shoes for sportier shoes. I guess he had little loafers or something.
So fun. Marketing.
He's a sportsman. Not a drinker. Okay, so how did we get to the guides?
Yeah.
So because, you know, it's a tire company, they wanted to create a guide that would help motorists. So the guides were initiated by Andre, who wanted to promote tourism by car and thus the tire industry. And they saw a gap in the market of a guide aimed towards motorists. Like there were guides before, like I had touched on in our European tour.
The travel, yes.
Like the Baedeker guides. Mm-hmm. But those weren't specifically for motorists. They're obviously for like...
Anyone English traveling anywhere.
Wealthy people trying to do the tour, which this was not that. And this was like, it had amazing maps, places for tire repair, replacement instructions, petrol stations, car mechanics, and a list of suitable restaurants and hotels. And who were using these guides? Rich people initially, because obviously rich people could buy the cars.
Right.
So this quickly evolved into a restaurant guide, and they separated the restaurant guide from their original, Michelin guide. And it's like the red guide, and there's a green guide too. But the green guide is for like itineraries and like things not food related. So it's like, oh, you can go to this site here. Oh, you can go to this museum here. That sort of thing.
Yeah.
And because they made so much money with the tire business, they weren't that concerned about losing money with the making of these guides.
Okay.
So they gave their guides away for free, and they were able to hire food critics to review mm-hmm. them, like specific food critics that were just for Michelin.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And this is what set them apart. So it's like the giving away things for free mm-hmm. and the reputable like reviews that they yeah. would do on these guides. So it's like no one could keep up because they would contract food reviewers yeah. or people, you know, people, but they wouldn't have specific like critics that yes. were just theirs.
Yeah.
Like
and they
Michelin
had the money to do
critics.
It.
Yes, exactly. And even though they weren't making money from the guides, they didn't care.
Yeah.
Making so much money from the tire business. After the First World War, the guide was continued to be given away until 1920. And it was said that André Michelin, while visiting a tire merchant, noticed copies of the guide being used to prop up a workbench. And so he said, the man only respects what he pays for. And so Michelin decided to charge for a price okay. of the guide,
okay.
which was 750 francs, which is about $2.15 in 1922.
Okay,
so pretty expensive,
I
would say.
That sounds yeah. expensive.
And then in 1926, they introduced the star system. Initially, there was only a single star awarded. And then in 1931, the hierarchy of 0, 1, 2, 3 stars was mm-hmm. introduced. And finally, in 1936, the criteria for the rankings were published. So I think they were just like giving out like stars, like, I liked
yeah.
it.
Like I could grade something differently than you graded something.
Yes.
Kind of
yeah,
thing.
It was
yeah.
kind of arbitrary. Okay. So 1 star is a very excellent restaurant in its category. 2 stars, excellent cooking worth a detour. 3 stars, exceptional cuisine worth a special journey.
Oh, okay. Why did that just make me so excited? Like, I love this.
I know. And it doesn't sound like that special, but I feel like when you go to like a 3-star Michelin restaurant, you're like, yeah. it's the most exceptional experience
like,
that you have.
One day, I don't know if Osteria Francescana is 3 stars or not, but like I will book a reservation there and then I will plan my trip around it. Like,
right.
You
have to.
You get the reservation first. And then mm-hmm. you figure out everything. And then you buy your flights
happen.
And things like that. Like you make sure you're yep. in that town 2 days before so you don't have issues. Like, yep. you know, you plan yep. around it. Yeah, it's because it's a special yep. thing.
Exactly. And in 2020, the Michelin Guide launched a sustainability emblem to symbolize excellence in sustainable gastronomy.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah.
Very interesting.
I immediately think of like Dan Barber and New York.
Yes.
I bet
yeah.
he has that. Or will
yeah.
get it.
And there's also an award called the Bib Gourmand. So bibendum.
Oh,
Bib
there
gourmand.
He is again.
So this isn't a star, but it's definitely an esteemed rating that recognizes like friendly establishments that serve food at like moderate prices, but like excellent quality.
Oh.
So it's not like a fancy restaurant, but you're going to get a good meal here.
I should look that up. Like,
yeah.
Why am I not caring about that? Like, that's affordable, you know, more,
yeah,
maybe more so.
Yes. Yeah. And then in 2016, a new symbol, a plate was added to recognize restaurants that simply serve good food.
Oh, I've, okay.
Whatever
I've seen that
means, I don't know, but it's funny, like how good these guides were. So like in World War II, at the request of like allied forces, like the United States, they asked Michelin to give all allied forces Michelin guides because they were the best maps.
Yeah.
And
wow.
they were obviously like the most reputable guides that they could use.
Mm-hmm.
They resumed printing the guides after VE Day, but yeah, they had stopped printing them for World War II, and then
yeah.
and then the allied forces asked them like, can you give
yeah.
them to us
no,
because
we
want
them.
those maps.
yeah.
yeah,
that's really cool.
They have obviously expanded their guides all over the world, not just France. It's a very prestigious award, obviously one mark of success for many chefs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the
wow.
history of the Michelin guide.
Love
and
that.
Michelin.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Did not think I would be talking tires today, but I
mm-hmm.
love where we got.
mm-hmm.
That was so good.
I know. I was like, we should talk about it. Why not? Because
totally.
I saw that that picture of Bibendum when he's like smoking a cigar and he has like a monocle. And I was like, why not? That? Let's just talk about it.
I love it. Well, I now I have to ask, have you ever eaten at a Michelin star?
You know, I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
I don't think so. James Beard. Like, oh, but totally. Those are for chefs. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Have you?
Only one, but it was Mexican, so it doesn't really apply here, but it was very good. It was in Chicago called Topolobampo.
Oh, it definitely applies. Yeah.
And I don't know how many stars it has or if it's
was
if
it
it's,
worth it? Did you love it?
Oh yeah.
No.
Well, I also didn't pay for it. I was with very generous family friends and
oh good.
It was a lot of like fish and vegetables. So it was like there was I don't think there was any meat, which was pretty insane. And it was like maybe 8 courses or something like that. And I think it was the first time that I had like a poached octopus.
Whoa.
Not like a calamari. I know that's different, but you know, it was like I think it was my first time that I had octopus.
Whoa, that's
yeah,
wild.
Yeah. And it was great. Yeah.
Well, Mexican cuisine is elite. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, it was really
yum.
Good. Well, shall I dive into the mini topic?
Please.
It is
please.
Very different, but I was like thinking about French stereotypes. And so I was like, oh, we got to dive into one. And we're going to talk about the marinière, the striped shirt.
Mm-hmm.
So
I
it
love
is a
this.
Cotton
okay.
long sleeve shirt with horizontal blue and white stripes, characteristically worn by quartermasters and seamen in the French Navy. Obviously, since its origins in like the 1850s, it's become a staple in civilian French fashion around the world. I had one from H&M in high school that I loved.
Oh my God, yes.
Like classic.
I feel like that was such a thing in like the early 2000s.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. Shirt
yeah
was everywhere.
I bought it on my first trip to New York, actually. So I was like 14, and yeah, it was from H&M, and I wore that thing for years. Loved that. It is also known as the Breton shirt, as many sailors in the French Navy were from Brittany, so that's just another name for it. So as I mentioned, it became a thing in the French Navy in the 1850s. And on March 27th, my birthday, 1858, they came out with like specific rules on how this shirt needs to look and needs to be made. So the body shall have 21 white stripes, each twice as wide as the 20 or 21 navy blue stripes. So I don't know why these specific numbers. But then the
French love the rules.
They
really do.
And then the 3/4 length sleeves must be no longer than those of the over jacket. So that's why, like, which is kind of unique because I feel like usually a men's shirt is longer so you can see the cuff, but they did not want that. And the flared collar must reach the neck. And it's believed that it was striped because it made it easier for men to see men who had fallen into the water, like from the ship.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That totally makes sense.
Yeah.
That's smart. Yeah.
Now we're going to get into the fashion side, which, you know,
okay.
if you are a long-term fan of the pod, you might remember our first episode and we talked about Coco Chanel.
Oh,
and
yeah.
During,
wow.
I know, rough.
Jump scare.
Rough podcast days, rough topic. We
that
all
didn't
know.
Need to be 2 episodes. Or it was one episode, but it was like 2 hours,
2 hours
or something. It was like so long.
Don't listen to it, people. Maybe we'll
Don't
redo
listen.
Coco one day.
Genius lunatic,
evil person that she was. So during the First World War, Coco would regularly, you know, go on seaside holidays, and she was inspired by the local sailors' uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
And at her second shop in Deauville, she launched the Navy style, which was like a shorter version of the marinière shirt. And again, like, it was for women. It was made out of jersey. It was comfortable. It was, again, like, part of, like, the emancipation of women's bodies that she is so known for. It became like a widespread luxury item, like her marinières. And years later, you know, Karl Lagerfeld would continuously pay homage to Coco by like recreating marinières in his fashion shows.
Yeah, it's like part of the house code.
Yeah,
I'm
totally.
Assuming. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I feel like every season they probably have some sort of marinier-esque thing. Yeah. Tweed and stripes.
Camellia.
Yeah.
What else? Yeah.
That's the trifecta of the Chanel, House of Chanel.
Yeah.
In the 1940s, the marinier was worn by many celebrities. We had John Wayne, Jean Cocteau,
oh
Pablo
my God.
Picasso,
Yes.
Brigitte Bardot, Marcel Marceau. Like everyone was in on the marinier now.
Yeah.
And then in the 1960s, after Jean Seberg's appearance in a marinier in the film Breathless, speaking of Godard.
Oh, yeah. We brought that back. Wow.
Yves Saint Laurent introduced it into his premiere collections. So many different designers and brands have done versions of the marinier. We have Jean-Paul Gaultier, Kenzo, Sonia Brickell. It's very Jean-Paul
Gaultier. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Prada, Kitsune, many, many more. And it's trickled down into the fashion bins of H&M where I plucked out and wore it all throughout high school.
Oh, yeah.
So thanks.
I got mine from J. Crew.
Oh, that is very J. Crew vibes, too. Mm-hmm. So thanks to Coco, I guess, for making that not just for
a fashion. Yeah.
Navy men and for making it for people like us, you know, 100 years later. So crazy.
Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah, that's the history of the marinier shirt.
Wow.
A classic.
I feel like it's coming back. Like we're seeing capris.
We're seeing capris.
I bought capris.
Yeah. Oh, so cute.
I know, I'm excited. What else? We're going to see the Jeffrey Campbell Lita boot soon.
Yeah.
Like it's imminent.
We've been seeing ballet flats.
Things. But that's not like.
That's so cute with a capri and a marinier. Like if that's your vibe, that's so Jean Seberg. That is probably exactly what she wears. And Breathless.
That's true.
Adorable.
Just get a little
we need
pixie
a little
cut
pointier bra though, and then that's
yeah, that's true. Those brassieres were
weapons.
Wow, that was cute. Thank you so much for that. Wow, lots of history.
Do you have a recommendation for me?
Let's just go back to Ireland at this point.
Oh, take it back.
It's an Irish band I recently discovered via TikTok. It's called Amble. I sent it to you yesterday.
Oh yeah.
You can tell it's just like some really adorable, cute young Irish lads who love to play at a pub. And they're so talented. The poetry that they write and eventually turn into songs. Oh,
I need to look them up on Instagram. I want to see like what their vibe is.
There's one guy who's real cute, like hot.
You love that.
He's probably 20, but
maybe they'll be playing when I'm there in the spring.
You should check it out because I think they have a UK Irish tour.
Okay. Okay, cool. Yeah.
But
I'm in
it looks
one.
Like they play it.
I'm alone in Dublin one night. So who knows what I can get up to? I'll
one night only.
Send him a DM.
One night only.
Well, my damage favorite... I can do in 12 hours alone in Dublin.
I believe in you, you know? Well, my favorite song of theirs is Mariner Boy.
That's the one that you sent to me, right? Oh, it was so beautiful. Yeah.
Bringing it back to your mini topic.
Yeah, that is so cute.
So listen to it. Listen to it now.
Okay, yep. I will listen to it again. Give them some listens. Support them. Support our boys.
What about you?
Well, I told you, of course, I already told you about this, but I just listened to Dolly Alderton's newest book, Good Material.
Yes.
We have recommended her another book of hers on the pod before.
Yeah. God,
love
her
so much. Uh-huh. She's just the best. Voice of a generation.
Mm-hmm.
She's great. And this one is, it's like a diary kind of form, and it's about a breakup, but it's mostly from the guy's perspective, and he's kind of like, you know, a floundering 30 something like comedian who's kind of struggling with work, and now he's struggling with this breakup. And I would listen on walks and giggle to myself out loud, just like almost like it made me think of like Never Been Kissed, like when you're so embarrassed for someone,
but it's so
cute and funny that you're like, oh, you're giggling because you're like,
yeah,
are so embarrassed. Like that is the kind of vibe of this book. Yeah. And then if you listen to the audiobook, Well, I read the book too, but and so at the end, it cuts into the woman's perspective for like a little bit, and so you find out things that like he was going through.
He's lying
like,
about.
No, or not what? Lying, but just like
I love how you just assume that they lie.
No, he's honestly just like he's probably like a Cancer, like just sweetheart, and she is an Aries who needs to be alone. Is basically like
okay.
And so like that's the vibe.
Anxious, attached versus
secure.
Avoidant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, secure. Totally.
Or
yeah.
Avoidant. Uh-huh.
I think he's secure. And then and then she's anxious and avoidant and breaks up with him and he's like, "What?" Like he has no idea.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was really, really like I was shocked. Like jaw opened at like one point. Oh, it's really good. And it was just like a fun good read. Highly recommend reading or listening. It's free on Spotify, actually, if you want to listen to it there.
Mm-hmm. Fabulous.
Yeah, good I'll material.
Give her a listen. Mm-hmm. And they're not like too long. That's why she's good.
Yeah, perfect. So are you ready for our word of the day?
Mm-hmm.
So I reached out to long-term friend of Europhile, our very first guest, Emil. And I was like, Emil, what is like a fun slang? Like, give me a word of the day. Like, I know I can Google this, but I'd rather ask you.
Yeah.
And he said that all of his American friends who live in Paris really love this one. And it's le sang, which is translates to the blood. But it means like, in his words, like the fam or like you're a real one. So you would be if you greet someone, be like, oh, le sang, like give him a like kiss.
I love that.
Like, yeah, really. I really love that too.
That's good.
Very cute. That's like, good. Oh my, you're my blood.
Yeah. Thank you so much for listening this
Thank
week.
You.
Follow us on everything.
Follow us on everything right now.
See you next time.
Ciao.
Au revoir.